I'm Dave Kunzman, Memphis Center. Been there a little over 7 years now.
Okay. Is this your first facility?
Yes, first facility.
All right. And how did you get into air traffic control?
I got a pilot's license when I was 20, 21. Wanted to go aviation, military aviation. That fell through because I broke an arm right before I signed up for it. Went to college or finished college and then had a job and kept wanting to do ATC, and then it just didn't work out. My wife was in law school at the time, and you had to do CTI back then for a little bit. So, and then life happened, and then all of a sudden, 2014, 2015, they're doing the off the street hire for the first time in a while. And I was right at that 31 age. I was 29. I was like, cool, let's see what happens. And I got lucky, got picked, got hired, got through. At right, and I got to the academy after 6 months after I turned 31. So
wow.
I just made it.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy that I work with. The same thing happened to him. He thought, oh, I'm not getting in because I, you know, I almost aged out. And then right as he turned that age, they hired him. So
yeah,
that's convenient. And you knew about air traffic control, obviously, because you're a pilot. But before then, did you know anything about it?
Not prior. Nothing other than just the standard stereotypes. I had a couple friends who were friends, like pilot friends who had air traffic controller friends. So I knew of the job. I heard things. I looked into it at one point, and it just life wasn't working at the time to really pursue it. And I was kind of like, oh, that'd be fun, but I can't right now. And then everything kind of just fell in line, you know, a couple years later. And I was like, oh, let's do this. Let's see what happens.
When you got your pilot's license, did you do it just on your own or did you do it through college?
On my own, just through a local airport.
Oh, nice. And was that down here in Boca? Or?
Yeah, it was actually at Lantana.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah. That's nice. So you got picked for the center.
Yeah, I got picked for en route. Had to choose between DC and Memphis at the end, and we chose Memphis, and it's been cool, different experience.
Yeah, and do you have any aspirations to go to any other centers or to try different type of air traffic or no?
In a perfect world, I'd love to, just because I like the challenge and I like learning new things, but we have two kids that are wanting to start kindergarten today, and you know, if I could snap my fingers and be someplace new, sure. But, you know, for having to go through the whole process and then start training over again. And that's not the hard part. It's more of like moving the family, getting reestablished. We kind of like our friends and community we have here. We've got great schools. We're in like the Memphis suburbs. So we have great schools, great neighborhood, great neighbors. And it's just kind of like a much slower pace here versus anywhere else I would probably transfer to.
Right. Yeah. And that training.
Yeah, I like going in now, just working, training somebody, doing, you know, putting in my hours and going home. It's nice.
Right. Yeah. No, it really is. What area are you in? What kind of traffic do you work in your area?
I'm in the southern area, which actually, for everybody who's been to the academy, I work Jackson Low. And then this incident actually happened in Kewaunee, which is the neighboring sector to Jackson Low, but they are combined up nearly all the time. So everybody who's been through the academy's seen that sector. It was kind of funny because at the academy, I remember calling my wife and I was like, man, these problems are crazy. This is so hectic and so hard. It's a good thing, you know, real life's probably not this hard. And then we get to the facility and Jackson Low is like that sector that just is probably it's extremely challenging just with all the military, the MOAs we have, restricted areas. Atlanta's got a MOA, Houston's got MOAs, we have two MOAs, Columbus just north of us has MOAs. It's just everything's restricted.
So it's chaos. Most of the traffic that you work is military?
It's a good portion, and then we have to thread everybody else through those areas. We'll have like a small 15-mile little gap to get between two MOAs, and we've got aircraft in and out of Jackson, Mississippi, which doesn't sound like a busy airport, but it's capital Mississippi, and it's actually Southwest flies there, Delta flies there. I mean, they have multiple flights per hour, plus a lot of private pilots in and out and turboprops and high-performance planes. So it gets chaotic, and then we're working a lot of New Orleans stuff, a lot of Mobile, Alabama, and the whole like kind of West Pensacola and stuff for Florida. So when the MOAs are hot, and everybody's flying, it's chaotic. I mean, it's literally the sector we've had people transfer the area, look at the sector, and then just shake their head and not want to do it. Because if they weren't comfortable working lows prior in their career, it's chaos. But I mean, everybody in the area does a good job at it because like we focus on that area to make sure you can handle that.
Right. And so Ocean, the one who had the incident, or is that a common person that you work with?
Yeah, that's the second MOA that we work. That's like their overflow MOA. So we don't work that one if the Meridian 1 west is full, they go into the Meridian 2 mode, which is the southern one. So we see them a couple times per day, multiple operations per day.
And where are they coming from?
Meridian, or usually Navy McCain, which is right next to Meridian.
Okay. Nice. So when I watched that, I saw that the type of aircraft that it was. So yeah, it made me worry as soon as I heard that, you know, he was having engine troubles, knowing that it was a single engine, single piloted aircraft. So tell me what happened on that day.
So I was training Art, and some of this might be rusty because I haven't reviewed the tape since it happened. I couldn't log into Cedar and see it, or into Falcon. But Art and I were training, and it was busy day, and we were just getting kind of beat up for a good hour. And the MOAs, all we have four frequencies for the MOAs that we have on a overhead speaker, broadcast speaker. So we just kind of listen to those, but we don't interact unless they call specifically, but they usually don't. But then if we need to talk to them, we click onto that frequency, frequency. So I overheard him just say, I heard just roughly, you know, engine or emergency leaving the MOA. And I could see which frequency lit up when he said that. I wait 5 seconds. I look at Art. I'm like, did you hear that? He goes, yeah. I go, okay, be ready. So we don't know what's going on at this moment. We just know if someone's bailing out of a MOA with an emergency. So then he switches to our common frequency, which is the normal procedure, checks in. He said, hey, I've got an emergency. Need to return to base. So Art clears him back to the base as we normally would, you know, figure get him headed in that direction, find out what he needs. And then we thought we were good at that point. And I don't remember how long it was, but it wasn't very long later. He comes back up and he's just like, that's not going to work. How about Laurel? So he knew of a local airport right there. The problem is they didn't really ever plan for an alternate. So he knew the airport existed. He just didn't know any of the other information. So real quick, we're like, okay, Laurel, Art gave him a great vector right to the airport. And then he just starts rattling off. He's like, I need Latin long. So I'm pulling that up. And, you know, I'm on the scope next to Art. So we got two side by side, getting all the information so he can focus on everything. And he's like, I need the runway configuration, runway length. Give me the CTAF frequency. And he's just rattling it out. And we're sitting there just getting him the information as fast as we could. And then he's got a second aircraft with him, they're a flight of two. So at least we're like, well, that kind of helps too, because if something happens, somebody else is kind of, we could see the primary target following with him. So we're like, okay, at least somebody's with him in the sky. And then he got to Laurel, was a little, not high, but then he had to spin around for the winds and for the runway configuration. We also have really bad radio reception right there. So we're also like, I'm keeping that in my back of my mind. I'm like, we need to get this guy like to the airport and get him like set up, because we're about to lose him and we don't have time to switch him on a radio frequency. So it was kind of hectic. And then at the same time, the sectors are busy too. So people are also trying to talk over us and you know, interrupt because they don't know what's going on. So it was kind of, it worked out perfectly. He called the center a couple days later and he and I had a conversation about it. And it was cool because we kind of just finished it, found out he was safe on the ground, moved on to the next thing. And then the funny thing was we had another emergency later that afternoon, a medical emergency that had to divert into Jackson. And 3 days later, supervisor comes up. He's like, oh, hey, your emergency from the other day called up. He wants to talk to you guys. And my first thing is, oh, which one? Right. And we just, that week we had had multiple emergencies, just like chaos.
Yeah.
So the pilot and I got to talk, and it was just cool to hear his perspective, because we debriefed on it, but we kind of just, hey, it happened. We moved on to the next thing. And then he's like, yeah, I reran this in the simulator, and had I continued to Meridian, I would have had to eject about 25 miles out of the field. And to me, I didn't realize he kind of portrayed that as like a fatal outcome for them. But, you know, we all know they can eject, but he was like, that could be fatal for us. He's like, that would have been terrible. He's like, I could have died. And I never kind of realized that injections there is a back, you know, last resort, but it's almost, you know, could be a fatal outcome for them. And that's how they see it. So he was super thankful. He also said that it was awesome that as soon as he needed the information, we had it for him. And that was super helpful for him to get into his alternate.
Yeah. I was impressed with that. What what do you have on your side? Because I could hear the teamwork in the playback. Now I know that it's you in the background giving the information. What kind of information were you looking at that was so readily accessible?
We've got like an AI function just on our keyboard. I can pull up any airport within the vicinity that will give me runway length, just your basic airport information abbreviated. So basic longest runway, runway configuration, CTAF. You know, just a little tiny blurb of basic information. So I pulled that up first, and then we've got a big overhead tablet that moves around, and that will pull up any chart in the country, any airport, all the airport information. That's the full, like, the pilot's, what is the AFD. So we're pulling up both of those, and then the lat and long, I came from one or the other. So it was just kind of like pulling up all the information, and then weather. I can't remember if we could pull up weather at Laurel. Or something in the vicinity. That's then a different function. So we're kind of taking multiple sources of information and just popping them all up, getting them all ready. And, you know, with the workload Art was under, usually if there's emergency, we have somebody to rush over to start pulling up stuff and to help out, you know, to make sure that somebody else is focused on everything else going on in the sector. So it was good. I was there to help him with that. And then we had a controller who was acting as CIC at the moment. So he just came over, grabbed his headset and just plugged in until we could get D-side over to plug in as well. Because we were Laurel Airport is under a shelf in Houston Center's airspace. They get a lot of jet traffic out of there. Sanderson Farms Chicken operates like 4 or 5 Gulfstreams out of there, which fly all day. So we then have to coordinate with Houston to, hey, we got emergency coming in your airport, stop everything for, you know, for a second. So that added a complexity as well, because it just wasn't like a airport that we operated that we knew nothing was in or out of right now, because there was always that, well, what if Houston's doing something inside their shelf at the moment? So it kind of worked out.
You couldn't see that? You couldn't
see
anything happening?
Our radar, we might not see below 3,000 in those areas, and ADS-B is hit or miss. So even below 3,000, we don't see great. So it's just always that, you know, what if, just one more thing to do, call somebody, coordinate, and hope for the best that they're not already blocking that airport for an approach or something, or switch to pilot or something like that.
Did you make that call to them?
I think our CIC did. I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering, because it was so quick. By the time he had said that he had an emergency and then an engine issue, I mean, I think it was within 2 minutes he was on the approach into the airport, which, I mean, is great that it was right there.
Right.
And he didn't seem as though when the playback was over, I was shocked. I was like, oh, well, that seemed like it went very smooth. It didn't seem like a big deal, but now you're telling me that it would have been probably a fatal outcome. I mean, you guys all handled that well. Also, he did, right? Because think of all that information he was asking.
The other side of the thing, too, is if you had to eject, where does the airplane go? I mean, it's not the most congested area in the country, but obviously you could always have loss of life on the ground or something too. So that's another thing that I didn't really think of before this. And like you're saying too, we kind of just moved on. We debriefed on it, moved on to the next thing, and kind of, I almost forgot about it 3 days later because it's just a thing that happened.
Yeah. So when you found out that you were getting this Archie Leak for Safety Award, how did you feel about that?
I mean, super weird in a way because, you know, as everybody says, it's like, we just did our job. It was just another day for us. Mm-hmm. Proud that we worked as a team to help him and to get that. And also just for, I feel like Memphis Center sometimes kind of gets forgotten in the airspace system. So kind of just brings spotlight on like, hey, we do good work. And then, you know, we're just part of the team with everybody else. So, you know, I'm proud that we were able to help him and kind of get acknowledged for that. And also it just helps to remind the trainees and everybody else, like even this emergency that to us didn't seem significant. It was. And to this pilot, it was super significant. And, you know, to everybody else, it was.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, before this, the people that were telling us to do these interviews said, oh, no, most people are very humble. They say it's our job, but it is, right? That's literally our job, is to get people where they need to go. But it's a reminder that, like you said, everything is very significant.
Right.
And even the little things that we do every single day that we don't get recognized for, this is a reminder to everybody that, hey, yes, you may have had some of these same saves, but it's just as important. All of these are so important every day. And, you know, I was thinking as an air traffic controller myself, like, man, we don't have the tools that you have. So if somebody had called us and said, hey, what's the lat long for this airport? It would be very difficult for us in a tower to pull that information up. You know, so it also brings to light other issues that may impact other airports and make them think like, okay, hey, what if we did have this issue? Where would we get that information? Right. So it's very, very lucky. And I didn't realize that Art was training. So how long was he into training that you were confident with him working that?
We had switched crews in January, and Art had moved to a crew that overlapped mine. So I was going to finish training with him. He trained on the high altitude up until the end of last year. And then this year he had a few hours on the low sectors, but not a lot. So he and I had been working the lows since January. There's four total lows, 65, 66, which is Jackson and Kewaunee, which are always combined. And then others closer to Memphis approach that are usually combined up. And our lows do just take a while just due to the complexity and the chaotic nature of them. So at that point, had this been January, I probably would have just pushed him out of the way and taken over. At this point, he wasn't ready to be checked out just because there's so many little details, but I was confident that he could handle this. And I was confident with me sitting next to him, between the two of us, I was okay. I knew he would talk to the pilot and give him all the information properly. And I just knew as long as I can get him the information super fast, he's confident enough to get everything over. And that felt good. Other trainees I might have been less confident in, but Art at that point, he was doing a great job. He just wasn't ready to be certified yet, just due to, you kind of have to see it all in those sectors before you're ready. And we were getting close. I think he finally finished about a month later. And that definitely helped because he worked that seamlessly. And then he had another engine out in the other MOA like a month later, very similar circumstance. And I was actually in the area too when it happened. I just got off a different position. And I, you know, they scream, hey, emergency. So I run over and plug in. I'm like, Art, again, you're going to do this to me? I'm like, come on. And that guy also got down safe. And we were like, what's going on? Like, Art, you need to cool it with your emergencies. This is too many.
Right. It's a magnet situation at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that's interesting. And so when you have these, are they very similar situations that they come out of the MOA and they contact you and they're just looking to land nearly immediately?
Usually we overhear them on the loudspeaker just saying blah blah, checking out of the MOA. That's their telling the other guys in the MOA that they're going to check out because they keep track of where each of them are. And then so we'll kind of have an idea one of them is coming towards us, and then we'll see them usually descend to the bottom of the block in the MOA. So that's another indicator. And then they'll check on our frequency for clearance out of the MOA. So we give them a recovery, which is just a standard procedure to exit the MOA, standard altitude, standard heading and everything. Then we flash them to approach, Meridian approach. If they're open, which they're open for the weekdays, they then take the handoff and then get them into the airport.
So with these emergencies, is it normally a very quick situation?
Yeah, I can't say we've had that many. I mean, it was rare that we had two back to back like this. I've had a few just like, hey, we've got a hydraulic warning light or something. We need to go back. Or maybe there's icing that weren't aware of when they got into the MOA, so they need to go. But these were like the first times where it was like, hey, this is like, I need to go right now situation.
Right. Did you feel that urgency when you were working him, or could you not feel it?
I definitely felt the urgency, but I was kind of the other thing that made me think this was more routine for him. It was, I heard him in the MOA say, hey, engine out, or whatever he said, emergency failing out. We didn't know at that point what the emergency was. So we weren't like, you know, we were ready to handle emergency, but I figured it was just something minor and routine. And then we asked him, I think, two or three times, and it finally was like thrust. And I'm like, okay, does that mean reduced thrust? At this point, I still don't know. And I've had aircraft with reduced thrust before. Okay, they still can get into an airport safe. So it really wasn't until when we talked a few days later that I realized it was complete loss of thrust. So we definitely just felt the urgency with him asking the questions and everything. But I mean, my blood pressure really didn't go up. It was just kind of like, it kind of worked with him being that professional of a pilot. He knew what he needed. He was very, very able to clearly ask for what he needed. So it just helped us to just like, okay, here's what you need. Here's what we got, you know, we've had other emergencies where it's just vague. Hey, we're having an issue. Okay, what do you want to do? I don't know. And then you're like, kind of feel lost for a minute because you're like, I want to help you, but you got to help me out here. What do you need?
Right. So at one point you had asked another aircraft on the frequency to switch to the CTAF frequency that he was on? Yeah. Was that because you had lost comms with him because he had gone to CTAF and you had no way of monitoring that frequency?
Yeah, we lost. I figured there's no way we were still going to have comms on him at that point. Honestly, I was afraid for a bad outcome and just figured that it's possible if it's a semi-busy airport or the other aircraft, his wingman might broadcast something or maybe hits on the frequency and just hears, hey, Ocean, blah, 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 I've landed safe. That was just like, hey, maybe we'll hear something valuable. And if we do, that's great. But back in my mind, I was also kind of nervous for a bad outcome. And at least if there was a bad outcome, we would know immediately and then be able to get, you know, I think we already had, I'm sure, emergency services headed there, but at least know that something happened.
And then we also find out.
We got a phone call. I don't even know. All I know is we were still busy working other traffic and somebody goes, hey, they landed safely. Okay. And then we had the wingman primary target still flying in the airspace. So we couldn't really release the airport yet because we couldn't prove where the wingman was because he wasn't talking to us. But we just saw his primary target flying back to the base. So we're calling approach to say, hey, can you confirm this is so-and-so and he's clear of that airport's airspace and, you know, let us know that he gets down okay as well. Because technically they're on an IFR flight plan and the wingman's still on an IFR flight plan at this point. And that's not something you might think of because he doesn't have a data block. He's not tagged up and he's kind of flying on his own at this point. So also
was base from them?
Maybe 30 miles from where they ended up diverting to. So nothing significant, but also things that you look back and say, okay, after this kind of emergency, what should we do next time to make sure that the wingman then calls us for a clearance? Maybe they should be on a better frequency to talk to us. Maybe they should brief on alternate airports. And Laurel, I think, is 5,500 feet, and they need 6,000 feet at a minimum, but there's no other 6,000-foot runways out there. And that's their, I guess, their base rules or whatever, however they do it. So that really was their best option, as longest runway in the area. And given the amount of jet traffic it sees, I've been told it's a decent enough airport, you know, well-paved and well-maintained. So it did help us, too, to look at our procedures and say, how do we do this better should this happen again next time?
Was weather a factor at all?
I don't think in that immediate vicinity. Being April, we might have had buildup someplace in the sector, but I don't recall.
That wasn't, yeah. Well, it was very impressive, and I was very shocked that it was such a short time frame. Normally you hear tons of, you know, it's a long time and they have time to get somewhere else, but how quickly he had to get down and that he did, that was very impressive. What was your debrief like with Art?
We just sat down and kind of picked it apart piece by piece that night at the end of the shift. And we picked apart the medical emergency we had that night piece by piece as well. Just what did we do? What could we do better in that situation? I really didn't have a whole lot because I'm like, we handled it pretty good. I'm like, without me sitting there, do you know how to access all that information as fast as I was able to do it? Half the area has a hard time finding lat and long for airports. We could click anywhere on the scope and get a lat and long. And it's one of those like hidden features that you have to hit three buttons to make it do it. So kind of making sure he was comfortable doing that. Just discussed different types of emergencies that could happen out of the MOA. And had there been traffic or had there been this or this, how else we could have handled it?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. That's always one of the things, right? It's like to remember all of those things that have happened in the past. So when it does happen again, then you're prepared for that. Have you guys made any changes at the facility in regards to anything like that? Like, especially with the wingmen going off and not speaking to you guys again or anything?
We're working on it. We're working on a new letter of agreement with their operations right now. So we're working on switching the frequency they're on to a more southern frequency that would just help us keep comms with them and then other procedures that hasn't implemented yet. It's because it's an at-house LOA that takes back and forth and forever.
Right. Absolutely. But, do you guys work with that? Obviously was a Hawk aircraft, single, you know, piloted single engine. Is that the types that you work with mostly?
Yeah, we see a lot of military. Columbus Approach flies, I think, mostly T-45s. So we see a lot of I get them all confused.
Yeah, the T-45, the Goshawk.
Well, yeah, Goshawk was the one we work. They fly the Texans, I think, T-38s maybe. We get a lot of just very, very military traffic in and out of Meridian, and they all do like to do approaches in all the airports in our airspace. So we do work the Goshawks a lot, but we also see just a bunch of other military planes throughout the day. It's very common. They all come out of Pensacola and do ops around us as well. And just with the varied amount of MOAs we have around us, it's just there's always something active.
I found that when you were working that aircraft, I didn't hear that many aircraft on your frequency chiming in. There were a couple. Is that normal that people kind of back off on your frequency, or that was just a fluke?
So the frequency he was on, if that was the only recording you got, we rarely use that frequency. It's really just military or one or two low airports in that vicinity. There's another frequency. There's two other frequencies that are kind of the busy one that have the bulk of the aircraft. So there wouldn't have been much on that frequency, maybe a Cessna at 5,000 feet, something like that. But anybody else would have probably been on one of the other two major frequencies.
Okay. Well, I guess that was helpful.
Yeah, except for we still have people talking over us and stuff on the other frequencies because they can't hear the full conversation. You know, that's always a challenge too with emergencies. You know, I've had a different one where I asked the pilot, say nature of emergency, and then 3 seconds later, a pilot tries to check in. And I'm like, even if you can't hear the pilot, you could hear me say that. Like, that's right. Key to, like, shut up for a minute. You know, right. I'm working on something that's more important than you climbing out of your airport at this.
Right, yeah.
This, yeah.
So now Art is certified, you said, right? Okay, wonderful. I think I speak with him in a couple of days, too, to get his perspective. So yeah, you said the CIC, right, pardon me?
He's in like Aruba right now or someplace fun.
Yeah, I emailed him and he said, oh, I'm out of the country right now. I was like, why are you checking your emails?
Yeah.
The CIC that was in the back, what was he doing? Was he coordinating or was he observing?
Yeah, that was Matt. At first he was observing, and then I mean, almost immediately he called for a D-side, or I think he called the supervisor in the area across from us to come over and just watch the desk for a minute. And then he plugged in, and we do a lot of like teamwork like that. You know, it's like who's most capable of help right now. You know, we didn't have any other D-sides in the area. He's a certified controller. So he's just like, I'm going to get in there and help you guys until somebody else gets here. So that's what we did. And that's helpful too, because especially having a CIC, because they know the airspace as well as we do. I'm confident anything we're going to do, he's thinking very similar to us. So that was a benefit versus like our supervisors don't work the low altitude sectors. So they don't really have a full grasp of what was going on,
right?
You know, and what coordination was going to have to happen there.
Well, it seemed like everything just fit into place in this situation.
Yeah, it did. It's one of those, like, we didn't have to think outside the box. Like, everything was just kind of by the book and worked out perfectly. And I think it was a good example of that. And that's what Art and I talk about, that just how, like, you know, we didn't have to do anything creative here. We just literally followed the book, followed procedure, and it worked. I was like, so that's good to see.
Yeah, and I'm glad it was a good outcome because... Yeah. Engine out is always scary, especially when he said that. I was like, I hope that this is a good Archie award winning situation. And, you know, I'm not feeling sad afterwards. But yeah, so congratulations. I'm very happy to hear this. I will be speaking with Art soon as well. And thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.